More people filing for unemployment.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, it's the Morning Open. Hello, I'm Steve Chiatakis. More problems for Toyota and the fight to the core for a couple of tech companies. All that ahead. But first, where's Wall Street? We're down right now. The S&P down about 1.5%. The NASDAQ off more than 1%. The Dow off 119 points, 10,151. European shares are off right now as well, anywhere from 0.5% to 1%. And in Asia, stocks closed lower as well. Labor Department reports this morning new jobless claims rose unexpectedly by about 8,000. And Diane Swonk is chief economist at Mesirow Financial. She's with us live from Chicago. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
I can't help but think that the labor market is still pretty much stalled. I mean, do you have a sense of what's going on here? Give us a little perspective with all these reports coming out this week, and we still have these jobless claims up.
Well, the bottom line is the economy is growing, but not enough. When you say the grass is greener on the other side, we're sort of looking at an economy where the grass is just a little less yellow. It's less bad, but it's still not good. And I think that's what the labor market situation is today. It's less bad, but still not good.
And tomorrow we get this big employment report, right? Do we see the job meter going positive? I mean, am I stretching
there?
I think
it's still a bit of a stretch. We're still seeing firing outpace hiring in the U.S. economy, although at a slower pace. You know, we lost 750,000 jobs a year ago in January, and this year we'll probably lose somewhere around 50,000 jobs in the month of January. That's better, but not good enough. And again, particularly not good enough to bring down the unemployment rate when you've got so many, the ranks of discouraged workers really growing. And even as hiring picks up, they'll be throwing in their hat looking for a job, which means we've got quite a long period of the unemployment rate still creeping up, even once we do see things tip back into the black for employment.
Did you see productivity grew faster than expected in the fourth quarter? We know the jobs are still scarce, Diane. What does that tell us quickly?
Well, basically, everyone's working harder for less money, and that's what's keeping margins intact. It's what companies do when top-line growth isn't growing very quickly, and they want to keep profits up.
Diane Swonk from Chicago. Diane, thanks.
Thank you.
Toyota says a design flaw was to blame for complaints about the braking system in its new Prius. A Toyota executive told reporters today the problem has been fixed, but it's just the latest in a string of woes for the company. Another massive safety recall with its gas pedals, and that could cost up to $2 billion. Marketplace's Amy Scott is with us live from our bureau in New York. Morning, Amy.
Morning, Steve.
What's Toyota saying about this latest problem with the Prius?
Well, the company held a press conference in Tokyo today and acknowledged that it had discovered an issue with the anti-lock brake system in its 2010 Prius. The flaw apparently could cause the brakes to become temporarily unresponsive. Toyota says it's fixed the problems in models sold since late January, and it's figuring out what to do about people who bought cars before then. And it's just come out that U.S. safety regulators have opened a formal investigation.
And we have this price tag now, Amy, for the separate gas pedal recall announced last month. Toyota is saying it's going to cost a couple billion dollars, right? I mean, how is Toyota going to turn this around?
Well, believe it or not, the company still expects to make a profit this year, but the brand has taken a big hit. I talked to analyst Aaron Bragman at IHS Global Insight. He says in addition to fixing these safety problems, they're going to have to make a big marketing push.
The core loyal buyer at Toyota is the baby boomer generation, and while they've been trying to branch out into younger generations from there, that's really their base, and I think really they need to get back to their base, they need to play to their base, or they really risk losing quite a number of buyers.
But it may be a while before we stop talking about this, before Toyota's out of the headlines. Congressional hearings start next week, and Bragman suspects more issues are going to come out in that process.
Marketplace's Amy Scott joining us from New York. Amy, thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Thursday, February 4th, 2010, at marketplace.org. The art market appears to be bouncing back from recession. In London last night, a sculpture by Swiss artist Alberto Giacometti sold for a world record price at Sotheby's Auction House. Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
The sculpture, called Walking Man One, sold for more than $104 million. The figure caused gasps of surprise in the auction room. Sotheby's had expected the six-foot bronze to fetch around $28 million at most. 10 bidders from all over the world battled it out. An anonymous telephone buyer won the day. Sotheby's are refusing to reveal the identity. David Norman, a senior executive at the firm, says the sale is a clear sign the art market has recovered.
It's a very strong indicator because not only did the Giacometti do so well, the sale itself was the highest totaling sale for an auction in London of any category.
The Giacometti was on sale because of the financial crisis. Walking Man 1 had been owned by the failed Dresdner Bank. The bank's new owners sold the sculpture to raise funds. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
A natural gas boom is underway in Pennsylvania, fueled by new technologies that involve drilling into shale, deep underground. But environmentalists say thousands of new gas wells could pose serious threats to drinking water, as reporter Joel Rose explains.
The northern Pennsylvania town of Dimmick looks like a pristine mountain hamlet until you see the tap water.
Looks like pond water, right? Wouldn't you want that coming through your house? Take a shower in it, wash your clothes in it, yep.
Julie Sautner holds up a jar full of cloudy gray water. Julie and her husband Craig say they used to get crystal clear water from their well. That was before the drilling started. Now there are more than 60 natural gas wells here.
Where's the closest one?
976 feet up across the road and up on top of the hill.
Our house is shook.
Yeah, this
is literally shook.
Yeah, I mean, I've already stood on the deck already and have the deck just shake from whatever they're doing underground.
Last fall, the Sautners and a dozen neighbors sued Cabot Oil and Gas. Cabot declined to comment. Like much of Pennsylvania, Dimmick rests on the richest natural gas deposit in the country. These days, energy companies can extract gas trapped in shale more than a mile down. But environmentalists like Myron Arnowitt at Clean Water Action say sloppy work can contaminate aquifers near the surface.
There are not enough inspectors in Pennsylvania to really watchdog what is happening with this sort of rush to drill natural gas here.
Last year, Pennsylvania gave out nearly 2,000 new drilling permits, while New York State put drilling on hold to weigh the pros and cons. The Pennsylvania governor is pushing a new tax on gas drilling to help close the state's $500 million budget deficit. John Hanger, Pennsylvania's Secretary of Environmental Protection, says that's an economic benefit.
It would be a mistake to just say no or time out. We can, in fact, produce the gas and protect the water and are going to do that.
Hanger says he's hiring more inspectors and making sure gas companies protect aquifers when they drill. But the Sautners in Dimmick say none of that will help them sell a house with gray water. I'm Joel Rose for Marketplace.
Today, advocates for reforming chemical regulation testify before the Senate. There are all kinds of toxic chemicals around us, from couch cushions to water bottles. The question is how best to monitor toxins that find their way into our bodies. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Jennifer Collins reports.
Erica Schrader is a scientist for the Washington Toxics Coalition. She's also a lab rat. She let researchers test the amount of some chemicals in her body as she nursed her daughter. The chemicals may slow brain development in babies. They're known as PBDEs.
You know, if you're sitting on a nice office chair right now, it's fairly likely that it has PBDEs in it.
Schrader had 10 times the level of PBDEs found in European women. Now she's demanding tougher chemical regulations.
So what we would like to see is that manufacturers can only use chemicals that have been tested fully for safety.
Mike Walls represents the American chemical industry. He agrees testing is critical.
Right now, we can find smaller and smaller amounts of more and more chemicals in more and more places.
But there are more than 80,000 of those chemicals, and Walls says the regulations need to target only those chemicals in everyday use to be cost-effective. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
We thought we'd test our knowledge of international affairs again, as we do every so often, and we're glad to bring in Stefan Richter with this morning's Marketplace Globalist Quiz. Good morning, Stefan.
Good morning, Steve. Ready for today's quiz?
I am. Let's dive right in.
So, is it true or false that the number of smokers in China is larger than the entire U.S. population?
The number of smokers in China? I would say, well, there are more than a billion people.
Billion three.
In China, mm-hmm. A billion three. And the United States has, what, 300 million and change?
Yeah,
so
amazing.
I would say yes.
Yeah, you're right.
Wow.
You're a real quiz master answerer here. Of the 1.3 billion Chinese, 350 million smoke. That makes for 27% of the entire country's population. So the Chinese are the world's top smoker by a long shot.
And by percentage they are?
The Chinese consume up to one-third of all tobacco products sold worldwide. And remember, at 1.3 billion, they just account for one-fifth of the world population. So they use much more tobacco than they even account for as a population share. And as a result of all that, up to 1 million Chinese die each year from diseases that are directly linked to smoking, such as lung cancer, cardiovascular diseases, and so on.
Are the Chinese doing anything about this problem there?
Well, they are. You know, if you're a basketball fan, you've heard of Houston Rockets basketball star Yao Ming, who is a big star in China. And he was asked to join the wife of China's vice president to lead an anti-tobacco campaign in the country. And Yao finds himself now named as an ambassador to the Chinese Association of Tobacco Control. The Chinese have an association for everything, just like we here in the United States. That makes for a solid basis for a future partnership, it seems.
Well, we're going to hope that it does some good over there in China. And Stefan Richter, thanks for joining us this morning with some insight on the international perspective.
Yeah, and let's keep the tobacco out and down.
All right, Stefan Richter, publisher and editor-in-chief of TheGlobalist.com, the daily online magazine of the global economy, politics, and culture. Apple's new tablet, the iPad, has touched off a battle of the tech titans. Like the iPhone, the iPad won't run Adobe Flash, popular software used in web design. Apple CEO Steve Jobs says Flash isn't up to Apple's standards and causes computers to crash. But Adobe just hit back. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith takes us ringside.
In one corner, there's Apple. Its iPhone created an industry standard, and the iPad may be next. In the other corner, there's Adobe. Its Flash player created a standard of its own for online video.
I think they're trying to figure out who will blink first in this war.
Carl Howe is a tech analyst for the Yankee Group. He says Apple is putting its weight behind rival technology HTML5, and that's a big blow to Adobe.
The fact that Apple's rejecting it, it's got to be a slap in their face.
But Apple may have a glass jaw, says Wedbush security analyst Michael Pachter. He says online games, ads, and video sites like Hulu all rely on Adobe Flash, and customers aren't going to be happy if they can't play online video games on their shiny new iPad.
I think Adobe feels that the software as is essential, and if Apple wants it, they'll modify the device to be able to use the software.
Adobe just announced its latest Flash player will be on all of the top smartphones. Well, almost all of them. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
And finally, we all remember the popular Australian anthem Down Under, released by the group Men at Work. An Australian judge has ruled that song sounds a lot like a popular campfire favorite written by a teacher 75 years ago. Kookaburra Sits in the Old Gum Tree. Judge ruled Men at Work owes the owners of the song years of royalties because of the similarity. Do you hear it? Or is the kookaburra not even close? What do you think? Share your thoughts with us. Get the podcast, too, at our website, marketplace.org. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.